Welcome to The Source, powered by WHYY News and Billy Penn. This collection of stories from the WHYY Newsroom offers fresh insights into the neighborhoods and local communities across the Philadelphia region, from Center City to the Pennsylvania suburbs, South Jersey, and Delaware. Get to know the issues and the people that make your community tick. This is The Source. I'm your host, Kenny Cooper. It's a place where thousands of people in this region were born for nearly 48 years. Life Cycle Wellness and Birth Center in Bryn Mawr was a destination for women who had low-risk pregnancies and wanted to deliver outside of a hospital. But earlier this year, the independent birth center closed. Midwives, doulas, parents, friends, and neighbors recently gathered for a community ceremony to grieve the closure, celebrate its legacy, and say goodbye. WHYY's Nicole Leonard was there and has this story.
Birth and the time leading up to it is a vivid memory for many families. And walking through Life Cycle, Ronnie Lajan can recall all the details.
So when your mom was in labor, we were in this room hanging out. There used to be a couch in there.
There used to be a couch in here?
Yeah.
Lajan brought his son and daughter to see the birth center, showing them what used to be a waiting area. Now, medical supplies, furniture, artwork, and other items are strewn throughout the space, all for sale. The small group moves down a narrow hallway.
So this is the yellow room. Go inside. You can walk in.
Oh, my God.
The yellow room was one of two birthing suites at the center. This is where Lajan and his wife, Lauren, welcomed both of their children.
Both were born around 5:30 at night, and then we were home the next morning. Both of us did not sleep at all, and I remember, laying next to her at night, just looking at you, and then eventually we put you in one of the little cribs for a little bit, and they checked on you.
Lajan isn't the only parent who took this final chance of showing his kids where they were born. Outside in the parking lot, Susanna Santola wraps her arms around her two young sons.
The impact that they had, not just on me as a mother, having the experience of giving birth here in a way that felt safe, that felt compassionate, that felt empowering, but also the way that I've been able, through that experience, to share with them what it means to come to this world in that environment, that they were so lucky.
Dozens of people gathered in the parking lot and formed a big circle. Some sat with small children in their laps. Others rocked infants in strollers. And a few chased after some older kids running around. One by one, people stepped into the circle to share stories of their time there, either as staff or patients. As they wiped away a steady stream of tears, they also laughed.
Walking, fastly, very fastly.
Mom of three, Bianca Charbonneau, reads a haiku that she dedicated to the midwife who delivered her youngest last fall.
With hands gifted, kind, and strong, a midwife caught you, and warmth filled the room.
Charbonneau says the closing has been a hard thing to process and accept.
I don't get it. I wish almost, I often wonder if the community had known they were in that much trouble, if there wasn't more we could have done.
Life Cycle owners say they decided to close after facing overwhelming financial challenges and regulatory changes. The high cost of maintaining services, low reimbursement rates from insurers, and skyrocketing malpractice insurance premiums, common for obstetrical health providers, became too great to sustain. The closure is part of a growing maternity care crisis, as other birth centers, small practices, and hospital labor and delivery units shutter across the country, leaving people with few options on where they can have babies and get gynecological care. Andrea and David Judge stand at the edge of Shirley's Garden, dedicated to Life Cycle's founder, Shirley Young. David shows me a photo on his phone. It's from 2006, and a very pregnant Andrea is laboring outside with their son.
Is Andrea just being checked out by the midwife in the garden? It's lovely.
In the garden.
In the garden.
In the garden.
Yep.
The Judges also have two daughters. Andrea, who's a lactation consultant, had hoped to bring them here for their health care. She says the loss of birthing options across the country is infuriating.
And I'm seeing way more inductions, way more, like, people really traumatized, which I felt like was getting better for a little bit.
Before people leave, some buy medical supplies and furniture from inside the building. They carry out breastfeeding pumps and wheel cribs across the parking lot. Melissa Patty delivered both her babies in a hospital, but got her gynecological care here. She's now the director of the Maternal and Infant Health Initiative at the Greater Philadelphia and South Jersey March of Dimes. Life Cycle might be gone, but she says the fight to expand midwifery services, raise reimbursement rates for community-centered care, and better support birth centers is far from over.
We want folks to be healthy throughout pregnancy and beyond, and we want babies to be healthy, and that really, you know, is the core of community health. It really starts with birth. Without safe birth practices, we don't have community health.
Life Cycle staff and educators are the last to leave after the ceremony. They hug, promise to see each other soon, and lock up. Out front, a large red for sale sign faces County Line Road. And the birth center that helped deliver over 16,000 babies across five decades sits dark and quiet, as it waits to become something else. Nicole Leonard, WHYY News.
Rising home values in some low-income sections of North Philadelphia have stoked concerns about the threat of displacement, which happens when longtime residents are forced to move away because they can no longer afford to buy or rent a home. Over the past 3 years, the nonprofit group Esperanza has been pushing back against rising home costs by creating a community land trust that renovates vacant buildings and rents them out to local families at below market rates. Mayor Rindy with WHYY's BillyPenn.com has the details.
Valerie Diaz-Pagan and her husband have four young children, three of whom are autistic. Until recently, the whole family shared a single bedroom in her mother's home in North Philadelphia's Juniata neighborhood.
So it was very crowded for us. My kids used to overstimulate each other and trigger each other, and it was just not a good environment for my kids to be in.
Caring for the kids was so time-consuming that the couple wasn't able to work much or save up for their own place. But late last year, Pagan got in touch with Esperanza. The organization runs a variety of programs. It has a charter school, a college, arts programs, legal services, and a growing portfolio of affordable rental units. Just before Thanksgiving, the family moved into a newly renovated five-bedroom row home in West Kensington, where they pay less than $1,000 a month.
I have a TV stand with a TV, and it has a lot of toys in it instead of figurines.
A couple months after they moved in, Pagan gave a quick tour of the first floor while her husband put their baby to sleep upstairs. They didn't have a dining table yet, but there was plenty of space for the children to hang out.
And I have my lovely kitchen where I made it homey, so whenever someone visits, if they want a cup of coffee, they're welcome to come get one.
Her house is one of nine long vacant buildings that Esperanza got for free from the Philadelphia Housing Authority and substantially renovated. The project was spurred by a report from Drexel University's Lindy Institute for Urban Innovation that found rents have been rising faster in eastern North Philadelphia than in the city as a whole, despite the neighborhood's persistent and widespread poverty. Maritza Ortiz is Esperanza's vice president of construction and property management.
We decided, okay, we need to create a land trust and try to protect, you know, our community and start acquiring properties and trying to keep them not only for now, but for long term and the future of the residents and be able to keep them in their neighborhood at an affordable rent.
A community land trust, or CLT, is a type of nonprofit that's structured to ensure its properties remain permanently affordable. Usually homes in a trust are sold to residents with restrictions on how much they can resell them for, but some CLTs, like Esperanza's, consist of rental units.
It's definitely a growing trend in Philly.
Rick Sauer, executive director of the Philadelphia Association of Community Development Corporations, said there are several community land trusts in the city, and more nonprofits are considering setting them up.
If your goal is long-term affordability and ensuring that future households can have access to existing affordable housing, that's a pretty effective model in that regard.
Esperanza paid for the renovations in part with a grant from the Federal Home Loan Bank of Pittsburgh. As a condition of that funding, the rental units are reserved for families whose incomes are well below average for the Philadelphia region and who have faced challenges like domestic abuse, chronic illness, or the threat of homelessness. For Valerie Diaz-Pagan, her kids' special needs made the family eligible for the community land trust, and she said moving to their own much larger home has made a world of difference.
They've been running around playing. They've been relaxed. No more overstimulation. Yes, it's very spacious. We have a backyard now. We have a huge living room, and we have the rooms upstairs. So it's been like the best experience since we moved here.
Esperanza is now moving on to the project's next phase. It's buying 10 more houses, which are in somewhat better shape than the first set, and plans to start renovating them in May. For Billy Penn, I'm Mayor Rindy, WHYY News.
We now turn to Whitesboro, New Jersey, a historically Black community in Middle Township. The community was formed in 1901 by several prominent Black leaders of the day. A group of residents have been coming across discrepancies between the deeds they hold and what is on file with the township. They have two concerns: that the discrepancies will cause problems down the line when their property is passed on to family members, and also they are concerned that the legacy of Whitesboro is fading from Cape May County's historical map. WHYY's Kenneth Burns reports.
Shirley Green is the executive director of the Whitesboro Historical Foundation and Museum. In her living room, she has set up a traveling exhibit. It starts in 1901 with Marcus Scull, the editor of the Cape May Herald.
He campaigned to remove the African-American residents from Cape May City. He said in order to get back to the glory of the Civil War days, pre-Civil War, they had to rid this city of the African-American people.
George White, a former congressman from North Carolina turned Philadelphia banker, bought the land which became Whitesboro through his company. It would be a safe haven community for Black people where they can be self-reliant. More than a century later, Whitesboro's location, a 15-minute car trip from the Wildwoods, attracted real estate investors starting in the mid-2000s, according to Green. Then last year, as she was preparing to put the foundation and museum into a trust, a friend who was assisting her discovered a discrepancy with the deed for the museum.
Michelle says, you need to go down to that county and see what's going on. That's when we found out the lot and the block number was changed.
It wasn't just the museum. It also wasn't just the other properties that Green owned. Bobby Harrison is another longtime Whitesboro resident. One day, Green asked him about the deed to his property.
I said, well, I don't know. I said, I guess it's good. I guess it's okay. I didn't take time to look into it. I bought the house and that was it.
Harrison let Green examine his deed.
I found out I had like almost like three addresses. Three zip codes, put it that way. One in the village, one in the courthouse, the other one in Whitesboro.
The deeds Green is coming across vary. Some have lot and block numbers on them. Others have more information such as a description of the property and how the lines are drawn. Timothy Dugan is chairman of the Eminent Domain and Property Valuation Group at the law firm Stark & Stark. He says all deeds are kept on record with Cape May County, but tax assessors who are independent of the municipality have their own version of property maps, which may differ.
The problem is if the tax map's been changed over time, you could have a big discrepancy in the tax record and what's actually in your deed.
That could lead to bigger issues when there is a property line dispute or when a mortgage lien is being placed on the deed. Dugan says those liens use the description of the property found on the deed. He adds those descriptions become more important as deeds are transferred over time.
If it was just a reference to a tax map, then you have a problem if that map is now different.
Officials with Middle Township said they have not received any concerns from residents in Whitesboro about deed discrepancies. But Green says that is not the case.
They said that they were told by the state to make adjustments. I said, well, do you have a number somewhere I can call the state people to find out what is, you know, what? Oh, no, we don't have the number.
The historic preservation work that Green is leading has the goal of making sure Whitesboro's legacy and the town itself is still around. Ultimately, she would like to see Whitesboro as its own incorporated town. The last time there was talk of incorporation was nearly a century ago. It was overwhelmingly rejected because of concerns that there would not be enough tax revenue to sustain incorporation. From Whitesboro, New Jersey, in Cape May County, Kenneth Burns, WHYY News.
Philadelphia area residents have endured several heat waves this summer, including scorching temperatures while the World Cup was in town. Climate scientists say these events are made more likely due to human-caused global warming. Polls show that about 3 out of 4 U.S. residents say they want their elected officials to pass laws that tackle climate change. WHYY's senior climate reporter Susan Phillips visited the Philly Fan Festival at Lemon Hill earlier this summer to catch up with residents and take their temperature on the climate.
I met Anicha Liu running to watch a match at the Fan Festival and asked her what percentage of her fellow Americans think there should be more action on climate change.
20%. So I'm being cynical, I don't know.
Yes, so what if I told you 74%?
Oh, okay, cool. That's more promising that people care.
Sitting on a bench having a snack outside of the festival, Andrina Avalos says she's also surprised by how many people support action on climate.
I'm actually happy that there is more than 50%. It's important that we do something in order to try to save our home, Earth. Obviously, climate change is real. We are witnessing all these natural disasters and this severe extreme weather changes. So, yes, I am part of that.
I got some hand sanitizer and sunscreen free.
Jarrell Patterson and Demetrius Caesar were handing out free hand sanitizer, bug spray, and sunscreen.
Yeah.
So I asked Jarrell,
have you experienced any of the impacts of climate change?
Since I'm 38, so from when I was 10 to, I'm going to say 10 to now, where I really like paid attention to the weather going outside, I don't really know how climate change really worked, but I can tell that summers are getting way too hotter. Now, for the past couple years, 5, 10 years, it's been like 65 in December. You'd be like, huh?
Are you part of that 74%?
Yeah, they should do something about climate change.
I mean, the real question is, what will we do to change the climate? What will we do?
Right.
I just don't know where to start. I wish they do something, because this weather is crazy.
Solar panels. That's a good joint. I like the solar panels. That's a good resource for climate change, but you got to be affordable. Not everybody can afford it.
It's something we need to discuss more that everybody don't discuss. We talk about everything else going on. Talk about the earth we live on and how we gonna keep living on it. It's so much war and all this stuff, the gas and everything going on, so it's like we shy away from this and all that other stuff don't matter if we ain't got nowhere to land and live. So
West Philly resident Amanda Benner was riding her bike to the Fan Fest.
If I were to ask you how many percent of people in the U.S. want their public officials to do something about climate change, what would you guess that percentage was?
75%.
Ding,
ding, ding, ding, ding, ding.
Yes. How did you know
minus
that?
Minus mega.
Minus what?
Mega.
Benner says the number of people who support climate change action is the same as the number that disagrees with President Trump, who says global warming is a hoax.
I think overall, corporations, everybody wants the people and the government and the corporations to do something about climate change for this country. It's ridiculous.
And what do you think is stopping that?
Myths, false information, you know, just the fossil fuel industry itself I think, is really complicit in this as well. So,
but not everyone I met identifies as part of the 74%.
I would say no, I think it's a hoax.
Bristol resident Amy Ewing was in line at FanFest for a free charm bracelet.
There was the Ice Age throughout history, throughout the world.
It has happened throughout time, don't you think?
Yes, I think climate has changed throughout time, but I feel like right now it's changing much more rapidly than it ever has, and that the cause is the use of fossil fuels.
But we need to save our country too. I think nuclear is the way to go. It's a lot more safe these days and a lot cleaner.
FanFester Bianca Benjamin says she's seen summers getting hotter while she's lived in both Philadelphia and New Orleans. She says she wants to see some leadership on cutting carbon emissions.
I mean, I don't have a direct solution. I just think that plans should be created and put into place that people can follow everywhere that will help to reduce our footprint.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
From the Climate Desk, I'm Susan Phillips, WHYY News.
A Philadelphia cabaret theater company is sorting through years worth of props and costumes to devise an immersive art space set in a fictional airport. WHYY's Peter Crimmins reports the next show of the Bearded Ladies Cabaret will be about the legacy of queer theater and letting go of baggage.
I recently met Rose Jarbo at a huge self-storage facility in Northeast Philadelphia on a brutally hot day.
It's where a lot of theater companies store stuff that doesn't need temperature control, which you may be feeling physically right now. It's very affordable, and we have about, Tay, how many units do we have?
Nine
units. We have 9 units here.
These storage units are filled with 16 years of queer theater props and costumes, like a cardboard sword wielded by Joan of Arc for a Bastille Day celebration, a cardboard shark from a gender-bending James Bond spoof, a cardboard toilet seat that was once worn around the neck of the late Dito van Reigersberg, also known as Martha Graham Cracker.
This is our legacy.
The Beards have long made theater cheaply out of cardboard.
You've got to watch it, Peter, because it's not, nothing's cheaply made. It may look cheap, but it takes a lot of effort. What is it that Dolly Parton says? It takes a lot of money to look this cheap.
Jarbo and company are developing Priority Hoarding. It's an immersive art installation set to open during the Fringe Festival this fall and run until the end of the year. It will be a makeshift airport where audience members get to go through piles of luggage containing artifacts from past Bearded Ladies shows. Some objects will have QR codes that link to recorded interviews with Bearded Ladies performers, like M.K. Tuominen, who played Andy Warhol in 2015's Andy, a Popera. At the time, Tuominen identified as female, but the experience of playing Andy Warhol was the start of their gender fluidity.
One of the most blissful moments of my life to date at that point was wearing the little boy tighty-whities and the bound chest. And it was a moment of utter secret trans joy, secret also to myself.
Jarbo says Tuominen's experience was not unique.
Back then, many of the Bearded Ladies did not identify as trans, because many of us came out, because we were processing our identities and our genders quite publicly without really knowing ourselves what we were doing.
Priority Hoarding is designed to be more than a trip down memory lane. Jarbo says the show highlights the legacy of queer theater at a time when its existence is under threat.
We're seeing two things happening. We're seeing a really active campaign from the government and people in power against LGBTQ rights, like erasing letters off of the Stonewall Monument online. At the same time, we're seeing art organizations fall with no to-do. Little mid-sized and smaller arts organizations that just end with no acknowledgement of the work that they've done and no care to the legacy. We are in the height of our powers. We're not ending anytime soon, but the thought is, what if we did our estate planning while we're still well?
Priority Hoarding is also about the physical process of getting rid of stuff that's been piling up. Audience members will be able to take objects home and add them to their own pile of stuff. Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
Finally, the 112-acre Fox Chase Farm in Northeast Philly provides students and the larger community with a more holistic understanding of agriculture and the environment. Agriculture impacts the food we eat, the air we breathe, the water we drink, and more. WHYY's photojournalist Kim Painter takes us down on the farm for a closer look at this immersive learning experience that allows many opportunities to get your hands dirty.
Welcome to Fox Chase Farm. You're at 112-acre production farm and demonstration farm for the really the community and for our students here in Philadelphia.
Yo, will they bite me?
No, they only got bottom teeth.
Typically, when we define agriculture, we think, oh, cows and plows. And the reality is everything in our life evolves around agriculture. Our food that we're eating, the air that we're breathing, the water we're consuming, the clothes that we're wearing. So it's super important for us to really bring all that we can to our community to have a better understanding.
Just weave it in between here.
The vision for the Fox Chase Farm really is to engage our students truly in immersive learning and doing that through experiential learning. And we say that from the context of not just being able to get your hands in and dirty and being able to experience agriculture, but being able to see the long-term impacts that's related to everything that we do. We really try to stress the career connectedness here on the farm. And we don't wait until high school to expose the students to that. We start from the littlest of children coming to the farm to engage them in all the opportunities in agriculture. The vision of the farm is to engage our students, but also to engage our community. So you can come here to the farm and be engaged in community activities, teaching you a little bit about anything that's related to agriculture.
Thanks for joining us for The Source Podcast, powered by WHYY News and Billy Penn. We leave you with a Billy Pennism, a bit of wit and wisdom from Pennsylvania's founder, William Penn.
Inquiry is human, blind obedience brutal. Truth never loses by the one, but often suffers by the other.
The Source is a production of WHYY News. I'm your host, Kenny Cooper. Our executive producer is Sarah Glover, WHYY's Vice President of News and Civic Dialogue. Our editor is Mark Eichmann, WHYY's News Director. Island 2 is the audio editor. Our engineers are Charlie Kyer and Al Banks. Funding for this podcast has been provided by WHYY and the Linfest Institute for Journalism. Please rate and review this content wherever you get your podcasts and share on social media. Visit WHYY.org for more news stories. Thank you for listening and engaging.